So from when I set the podcast up to now, one mistake that I made from that I would absolutely do differently is I would have launched much earlier. I mean, I held off two and a half months from my actual launch because I was scared that when the podcast was going to launch, that it was going to be a crap and it was going to be a failure.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
All right, James Schramko here with a special guest on the topic of podcasting. And beyond that, it's a little bit more than just podcasting. I think there's quite a few lessons with our next guest, certainly about the term Americans are fond of called hustling, which is always funny to Australians because it's kind of what you do to someone if you steal their money. But in any case, I've got John Lee Dumas. Welcome to the show.
James, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to chat with you and your audience.
Now, a lot of people have heard of you by now, but that wasn't always the case because you've only recently hit stardom and you've had this prolific explosion into the iTunes world, going from almost pretty much nothing to having lots and lots of downloads. You must be in the millions now.
I am. I just broke 2 million, actually. And the month of August, we'll break 400,000 unique downloads.
Right. Now, of those downloads, how many people re-listen to episodes?
I'd say between 2 and 3 people.
Right. So just to put that in perspective for our listener, I have about 3 podcasts and I'm still somewhere around the 700,000 or 800,000 download mark in total. On an average month, I'll get somewhere around 50 to 60,000 listens. So you have a substantially massive download audience. What do you think's caused that?
I think one of the reasons is because I do now have 300 and I think as of today, 8 podcasts. So, I mean, literally one person can go in and download 300 podcasts if they want to. So that can definitely be a reason for the inflation of my numbers. But number two, my daily show. I do it 7 days a week. So a lot of my listeners are very habitual, James. You know, they wake up, they pour a cup of coffee, they download Entrepreneur on Fire, and then they just skedaddle off to work and they listen to it on the way. So it's kind of become a habit of theirs and it's something they don't really forget.
Okay, so a couple of points here, and this is something I advise people who are new to podcasting. The first thing is if you have a big catalog, then you will actually grow faster because people get onto one episode, they like it, then they go and see what else you have and they work their way through the series like we do with TV shows, like we do with albums for artists that we like. We want to collect everything. So that's one important tip that you've given away there. The second thing is I want to talk about this metronomic sort of style that you have. You have consistency in spades. I think that might be a military background showing its hand.
Absolutely. It definitely is a military that we were taught at a very early part of our military experience that we need to have systems in place and you need to really kind of keep that discipline moving forward. Because when you're an officer, which I was in the Army for 8 years, 4 active, 4 reserves, and you're training a platoon, they need to know what to expect day in, day out. And it's that consistency that really keeps the troop in line, so to speak.
Okay, so this is the interesting part. You may not be aware of this, but inside FastWeb Formula with our community, there's almost 800 members now. We have our own John Lee Dumas thread where we talk about you.
I did not know that. I've not been privy to this.
Right. So if you look at your analytics, you'll probably see a few visits here and there from FastWeb Formula. Now, I told people that I was going to be having a chat to you. And interestingly, in this market, in the Australian audience, where we have a pretty good percentage of members, probably more than half the members, but we do have members from all around the world. The thing that comes up often is that every single show is exactly the same format. Is that true?
Identical.
Identical. Okay, so this could possibly be the big talking point. It's something that you are able to wheel out over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. I mean, over 300 times. One of the questions is, how do you stay pumped or excited about continually doing the show when you have exactly the same thing every single time?
I mean, when I ring somebody up on Skype and James Schramko answers, how can I not be excited?
That's almost as cheesy as your show intro. When I heard your show intro, I thought it was a parody. It's like a World Wrestling Federation or a circus ringmaster. It's so over the top that I thought it must be a joke, but apparently it's serious. Tell me, what was the background to that intro, and why do you think that's so successful?
You know, it's just one of those things where my podcast is all about having fun and just kind of having conversations about people's journeys, and not just talk about business, but talk about the failures and the flops and the mistakes, and then get up to those aha moments, but then the flops again, and keep kind of going back to that whole entire journey, which has the ups and the downs. And so I kind of wanted to start off on that cheesy, kind of funny, kind of not so serious note. And, you know, I know you guys get a lot of the same stuff for Think, Act, Get. You know, you get a lot of feedback about it just doesn't fit your show, and it's just really not the kind of vibe that people expect to come from it. And that's exactly what I was going for.
Yeah, we do. And we do get that as a positive, just in case the listener's wondering. People say about me, for example, that Ezra, my co-host, brings out my funnier or more human side, because in my other business stuff, I can be quite to the point. I'm very direct in business. Now, so this is really one of the pivotal points, that the exact same recipe over and over and over again as the creator. You're excited because you feed off the energy of the star or the,
totally,
the guest, right? So one of the other things that was sort of put to me is, do you feel that you give too much power to the guest, and that John Lee Dumas has taken a back seat to the show?
Yeah, purposefully, because I don't really have a ton to give. You know, I really have my guests on for a reason, because they're successful. They're inspiring entrepreneurs. Up until 2012 in September, so the latter quarter of 2012, I really hadn't even been an entrepreneur in any way, shape, and form. So I need to take a backseat when I do have guests on that have been there, done that, that do have experience, that do have lessons learned and mistakes to share and aha moments to divulge to us. And I take that backseat happily, and it's really kind of enjoyable for me to hear the kind of gold that they are just very forthcoming with.
Yeah, you seem to be able to get the strong stories out. I think, obviously, you have so much structure there. Then there's people like me who say, hey, John, do you want to get onto Skype and have a chat? Now, I have not prepared you with any questions. I have not sent you a schedule in advance. I barely turn up on exactly the right time. Now, we all have our own different styles. My goal when I'm interviewing you is to try and ask you stuff that no one else is asking, and that's why some of these questions might even sound a little bit difficult. But here's another big one for you. Do you think your format is likely to change? Do you think what got you to where you're at now with the big downloads is going to have to change to get a stickiness with your audience? Because anecdotally, a lot of my community have listened to it, gone through a few episodes, and then unsubscribed because it's too frequent or too same.
Absolutely. And I think that's where my business model really comes in and is so successful, because every single day I release a new podcast with an inspiring, successful entrepreneur that really has a massive audience of their own. And then they're sharing that interview with their audience. So 7 days a week, James, a whole new set of eyes and a whole new set of people are being exposed to Entrepreneur Fire for the very first time. And some of those people are becoming subscribers and some of those people are not. And that proportion, and that keeps that snowball effect rolling 7 days a week. So people drop off, new people come in and fill their space. And it's this perpetual movement. And, you know, my numbers speak for themselves. I mean, it was 200,000 3 months ago, 300,000 last month, and in August we'll break 400,000 unique downloads. So something's working, something's sticky enough, and I don't see myself changing my format anytime soon, but I'm always open to the changing of the entrepreneurial world, because if you're not like willing to be flexible and be agile, then you're in a lot of trouble.
Well, I think this is good. A lot of the people, by the way, when they posed that question, they were saying, John should not change the format because it's working. And, you know, you can look at it different ways. In my case, I have probably a similar number of pieces of content to you from just Super Fast Business. However, I have a much lower download ship and I don't have a lot of other people promoting my show. I'm kind of like Robinson Crusoe promoting my show, maybe just the fan base doing it and the occasional guests like yourself, or if I do like a little flattery mention or something in a show so that people will, will, you know, if I say Dan Norris and then I go, hey, Dan, you got a mention in this show. And I do want to credit him though, because he's the first person who interviewed you way back in my community, who, and that's how I became aware of you. And then you asked me to be on Entrepreneur on Fire, which was a tremendous experience as well, especially to see your mechanized machine behind the scenes. I had a true appreciation to that.
Well, thank you. And I think that kind of shows, you know, the difference between our shows, where you probably have, you know, a very consistent, very loyal, very sticky listener base, which in a lot of ways is much more valuable. I mean, 60,000 people that are really loyal, really sticky, you know, are probably worth two times that number of just people that are kind of funneling in, funneling out.
I agree with you. I would have the smaller audience and the people who don't leave. And just to give you some metrics, my business is now generating more than $2 million a year, and 90% of the business is repeat and referral customers. So
huge. Congratulations.
It's a very small customer base. I only have about 22,000 people in my entire database, but those people buy every product that I have. And it's just interesting. You know, I can learn a lot from what you've done, because no one's really done the same thing that you've done before. There's people out there with huge audiences who are only now tapping the monetary flywheel. You know, I guess examples, well, there's you, and we'll talk about your monetization model in a minute.
Sure.
There's Pat Flynn, who I've never actually met, and I've asked him to speak to me on a podcast, and he said he would, but it's sometime in the future because he's so booked out, which is, I thought, very funny for a passive income business model, that you're so busy you can't get to a show for a couple of months. Somewhat ironic, but you know, he's just recently tapped his audience with a product, and from his income report, I think he made 50 grand or something profit from it, something like that. So it's interesting to watch these big, big numbers audiences now start to turn that into money and to see how it translates. And I think there was a lot of buck back from his audience. Well, you know, shouldn't everything be for free? Are you finding that when you pitch products to your huge listenership? Now, let's take those numbers again. If you have 400,000 people listening to the show, one would think that you could put out an offer and turn a percentage of those into cash.
Yeah, you definitely would think so. And that's definitely a road I want to pursue at some point. I mean, monetization has always been the plan and the ideal for Entrepreneur on Fire. I started with my first monetization back in March of 2013. So I did wait a solid 4 to 5 months before I really turned it on. And that was purely on the sponsorship side. And, you know, that's been a five-figure plus number on a monthly basis ever since I did turn that on. So I could have started that sponsorship model a lot earlier, but I really wanted to hold off until it got to numbers that really made it worth diluting your podcast with sponsorship. So for me, that number was five figures a month. So when I hit that, I brought in the sponsors back in March of 2013. And that was my really only major monetization model for a long time, until actually July of this year. And I know you and I have talked briefly about this, James, because I sought your advice, because you really are the king when it comes to masterminds and things along those lines. I launched Fire Nation Elite on July 1st, which now has 90 members, each of those paying $165 per month.
Nice. And you hand sift through and interview those people as an application process, right?
I do a 15-minute chat with every single member that applies for Fire Nation Elite before they come in the door. And that was as much for me, James, as for the process, because I really wanted to get to know my customers that were really looking to interact with my brand and take things to the next level. And it's been a huge learning experience for me. We're actually going to be shutting the door at Fire Nation Elite at 100 people, because we feel like that's the perfect manageable thing. We may replicate that with another mastermind and bring that up to 100. And I probably won't use the same 15-minute chat model. Maybe I will on some levels, but not probably to that degree. But you know, it really was huge for me to learn so much from my audience during those talks. And I actually used those talks to set up my next leg of the business, which is going to be digital products.
Right. Well, this is really interesting. You know, I was just thinking, man, we should definitely talk about this offline, but we should talk about it online, you know, if you're happy to share some of this, because I've seen this happen before. I've got a lot of students. Absolutely the first point that a listener should really take from this, and I think this is probably going to be one of the most valuable podcasts I've done for a while, is firstly, Knowing your customers is paramount. So we just mentioned I have a fairly small database compared to a lot of other marketers, but a reasonable revenue and a very good profit margin because I know my customers back to front, inside out. I know their problems, fears, frustrations. I know who they are. I know their names, and I've met most of them face to face. So that's one thing, and that's because I go to local meetups all around the world, most capital cities. I literally fly to places and I meet people. And that's a super, super important step to growing your business is to get out and meet people. And I'll be hoping that you're going to come and meet us too in Sydney next year. So there's that side of it, right? The next element is I've had experience with people who cap memberships, and it can be a little bit disappointing because you're actually sometimes putting an artificial limit on the income that you can make, which can have a negative motivating effect because you know that no matter what you do, you can't make more income or get a better return. And it's almost like selling time for dollars where you can't make more than that. If you sell 1 hour for $1,000, like you're not going to make more than $1,000 and you have to work that hour. So sometimes we put a constraint on the wrong part of the membership. So there might be another metric that could be the cap rather than a strict number of people. To give you just by way of contrast, I have around a 20 minute to 25 minute interview with members who come in on a $1,500 per month program. And I've actually decided not to cap the numbers. I've actually decided to increase the numbers because what I've found is that it actually helps the members because they've got more resources, more access to a bigger customer base, more people that they can sell to. And it is actually a benefit to the membership to have more numbers than what I thought that we might need. But I comfortably ran it for 3 years at a very steady number of about 30 people. But I think it's a 50 to 60 person membership is going to actually be more powerful.
That's some really interesting feedback. And yeah, you're right. This is something I had a conversation with you prior to me launching and something I really look forward to continuing to talking to you about, because I do look at you as really the subject matter expert in this area because you've done it on both a micro and a macro level. Because I know you have another mastermind with 700 or 800 people that's also running very fluidly. And to me, that's kind of where I'm at, where I'm like, I really want to have this mastermind be incredibly valuable. And it just seems with what we have going on in the Facebook group, it's so active, it's so engaged, there's so much going on that kind of more than 100 people almost seems like they'd be overwhelmed. And so it's like, should we just cap it at 100 and then just recreate the exact same thing, almost like a franchise model? So we're not really limiting numbers. We're just limiting what could be an overwhelmed situation. But again, this is just us, trying and failing and succeeding and then failing again, because we're just testing the waters. We don't really know it works.
Well, I mean, this is fascinating. When I started my mastermind, and I hope the listener will forgive us for going slightly off the podcast topic, but this relates to monetizing a podcast, okay? That is the core we're talking about.
Totally.
I partitioned off small groups of 10. I thought 10 was the number, and I had four groups of 10 running concurrently, that when I consolidated that into one group of 30, it was more powerful, it was simpler, it was more fun, it was more interesting. And that group that I have of the almost 800 members, I think that would be a better community at 2,000 members, the way that it works. And probably it works because I don't have a Facebook group and I don't have a LinkedIn group. There's only one place people go instead of fragmenting their attention. It's just a very core, and importantly, it's on an asset that I own and control. I'm very concerned about running something on Facebook just from a control issue, even though I get it that it's super awesome, but it does get noisy and it is hard to organize compared to different forum platforms. But I am a member of groups with 5,900 members on Facebook, which is a fantastically powerful group. I'm a member of one with 1,214 members, and I'm a member of one with 204 members, and they're all different groups, but I use those for traffic. This is where you and I are slightly different. I use Facebook and LinkedIn to bring customers into my private memberships. And when it comes to monetizing the podcast, I've always thought of the podcast as being a traffic rather than a product. But you've shown me, like some people who sell podcast subscriptions, you can make money as the podcast as an actual product using the traditional radio model of advertising. But I've always felt that I'm better to set up products and services and then advertise them myself. So even in this particular podcast, I've already mentioned Fastweb Formula and I should mention Silver Circle. So it's kind of like I'm doing it's almost the perfect blended radio insert within the content that is almost like a product placement, but it's my own products with a higher percentage margin than selling advertising space to someone else who's going to then make more money than what they pay me.
And that is exactly the limitation that sponsorships have that you mentioned that, you know, the kind of the model that I'm moving towards with the masterminds have that I would really like to kind of break out of. Because you're right, there is a limit on that sponsorship revenue. I mean, for August of 2013, we made $17,500 just in sponsorship revenue alone for Entrepreneur on Fire, which is a great number, but that was the cap, James. That's at 100%. We can't go any higher unless we continue to jack the prices up. And like you said, there's people, my sponsors, who are making more money than I'm making because, you know, that's why they're having these sponsorships because they know the lifetime value of their clients. So my listeners are being dragged away from my brand to go to Audible, to go to 99 Designs, or to go to Squarespace, or wherever they're going. It's a way for me. And let's be honest. I mean, these sponsors that I have are great for entrepreneurs. They offer great value. There's a $99 power pack if you go to 99designs.com/fire. But the reality is it dilutes the podcast. It really does. It takes away from the main content that I'm trying to bring. So what's that weighing factor? And for me, I really believe that your model is the best where it's all about building the audience and getting them into your funnel and then having that funnel take over. And with Entrepreneur on Fire, I've been able to build a massive audience, but you know, now I really need to start working on that funnel.
Yeah, I think that where it's interesting, you've built a big flywheel, it's spinning fast. It's when you start putting monetization pressure on it, it's to see how much it slows down.
Yes.
And you know, for comparisons, off a very, very tiny subscription base, maybe I'm a 10th or whatever, or 15th, I could make about the same money as your advertising with just affiliate income from having guests who are really good at what they do and linking to their product as an affiliate. And some of them are recurring products. So year to date, I've probably made a little more in affiliate income just from having the occasional guests. Like one example that my audience won't be a stranger to is Clay Collins. I think I've had him on 4 or 5 times and I'd just be sure to get him on every couple of months because A, he's an awesome guy. B, his products are absolutely phenomenal and I use them in my own business. And C, he's always got new innovations and interesting information that's useful for my audience, even if they never buy anything. So it's a perfect fit without diluting the quality. And if I go back to one of my mentors, it was really about lack of compromise. And for me, I think having other people's ads on my site would be a compromise. So I think in the ideal world, you'll have your JLD products and services. That's short for John Lee Dumas, in case our listener hasn't connected it. That's your code name in our forum. Then you would be able to top and tail your own show with your own products.
Absolutely.
At my event, I even wore a t-shirt for my web development company and for my SEO company. I actually sponsored my own event, which was kind of funny.
I mean, goodness, if I could just wake up tomorrow and just have this suite of products just ready to go, I mean, I would shut everything else down.
You can do it if you blocked one day a week and back on frequency. What I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about, is there too much content? Are you creating more traffic at the expense of going for the next level of the funnel or integrity? You know, this is the meaty stuff and this is what I wanted to talk about. So let's throw a JLD question back at you. From the time you set up this podcast to now, what's a mistake that you've made that you think you'd do differently if you were to do it again?
So from when I set the podcast up to now, one mistake that I made from that I would absolutely do differently is I would have launched much earlier. I mean, I held off two and a half months from my actual launch because I was scared that when the podcast was going to launch, that it was going to be a crap and it was going to be a failure. And until I did launch, it could never be labeled a failure because it hadn't quite yet launched yet. But then when it did and it was successful and started picking up steam, I realized that those were just two incredibly wasted months. And I think that that's really valuable for the listeners that are, you know, just kind of holding back something or just waiting until they get a little bit better or just waiting for something. And I don't even know what I was waiting for, to be honest with you, because I had all the interviews completed. I was just really scared to fail, that was my biggest mistake that I made. And another thing that, you know, moving forward after I already launched the podcast, you know, one thing that I really did well was I really did leverage the audience of my guests on that daily basis, you know, really reach out to James and to Seth Godin and to Tim Ferriss, you know, after their podcast went live and just let them know, hey, these are the links I'd love if you shared, like make it really easy for them to do. But, you know, one thing that I really would kind of want to go back and just really kind of, I guess, more maybe focus on if I was to really be moving forward from the day one, which was September 22nd, and moving forward is, you know, say, hey, listen, let's just carve out some JLD time where I'm not just trying to perfect the actual podcast itself, but I'm looking more forward in the future and I'm carving out like 7-8 hours a week to just work on product. Because I was getting emails from day two, from day three, James, from my audience telling me what they needed, what they wanted, what they were struggling with. And I would point them in different directions. But why wasn't I actually creating a suite of products on my own? Here I sit 11 months later, you know, with still nothing to really call my own besides the mastermind and then the podcast. And there's nobody to blame but myself for that.
Well, that's exactly what we were talking about before and what Pat's just done. I think earlier to Mark, I've got a great metaphor for this. It's like when you travel, some people spend so much time thinking about what they're going to pack and they get the bag out and they pack so much stuff and they micro analyze every single component. And it's like it just delays their whole departure thing. All their productivity shrivels away. Whereas the experienced traveler will like pick up the backpack that's sort of near the door that's got two pairs of undies, three t-shirts and the minimum, right? And they're out the door. They're gone. They're on the trip. And, you know, they can buy a t-shirt at the shop if they run out of clothes, like just get out in the traffic and get going instead of mucking around trying to prep and over prep. Probably you are scared of putting something out into the world that people might reject because, you know, you'd be outcast from society, stoned to death and die.
That's exactly what I thought. I thought that it was going to be all
That's
over.
That's our human instinct. It's very normal. And I'm glad you've covered that. So here's the thing. And I think I did this a little bit last year. I was grinding out a lot of content and luckily I already had a base of products and services and affiliations to send people to. But I do spend more time now on making sure that I've got the goal or the point. What is the point of all this noise, this huff and stuff, this busyness, this regular content? Is it actually doing something? So I'll share some stats with the actual Superfast Business site. I've been able to lift my opt-in conversions. I've been able to quadruple it in, this year compared to last year. I had some help with some conversion experts on that as well. I've also been able to put out a little less content lately, but get more comments, to get more downloads of each episode and to have a little bit more thought as to the storyline or what it is that piece of content's actually doing, which I, you know, granted is hard for you with the same cookie cut template. That's why I was really curious if you got sick of it or if you feel you need to change it up or if you just simply add a different show to the mix.
Exactly. I mean, there's just so many different ways to go. But I mean, what that all comes down to and points back to is creating more content. And I mean, I just couldn't agree with you more about having to really now take a step back and analyze, you know, what is this whole audience for? What are these 400,000 downloads? What do they mean to me, to the brand, to the business, to the bottom line, to the monetization? That's the important thing. That's the important number. The important number is not 400,000 downloads. The more important number is how many dollars am I able to translate that into to sustain the business. And that's why I need to step back and say, okay, where are my, you know, products that fit perfectly with the Entrepreneur on Fire brand that are just going to naturally drive people, you know, to the site, to the products page, and then to the conversion.
That's it. You can't go and buy groceries with your podcast downloads. It's like,
no,
go to checkout with your food. Oh, yes, but I get 400,000. Yes, so what? You know, like it's money in the bank.
I'm being featured on iTunes. Help me.
Now, I've got a couple of other questions and I'll release you. Probably you've got a little bit of friction going on now. So interesting. You've got the big title tag thing. It looks a little keyword spammy to me, but do you think it's important to get that pole position in iTunes? Do you think that it could be moderated? Like, how passionate are you about the SEO podcast optimization these days?
incredibly passionate about it. I rank very high, almost number one position for almost every key term that I want to, all because of the title, all because of the description. You know, I know how to go into Libsyn and to actually title that out. So when people are using that search bar, the 45 million people that are going to iTunes on a monthly basis and they're typing in something, they're typing in content marketing, they're typing in startup business, they're typing in the word entrepreneur, and the first thing that comes up is a free podcast called Entrepreneur on Fire. That fact that my SEO ranking is so incredible and so high within the iTunes rankings is something that I think is critical, and I think it pushes my downloads. I mean, you know, while you were kind of going on your little spiel, you know, I just logged into the Australian iTunes. I was curious as I'm talking to you and an Australian audience, and Entrepreneur on Fire is the number one ranked business podcast in Australia. I don't know why. I know it's not from the super fast business community, but it's from some people who are deciding, hey, I'm going to check this podcast out. You know, Pat Flynn is 6, Dan Miller is 8. There's just a lot of really great podcasts that are in this mix. And I think that, you know, that search bar has a lot to do with people going, not even knowing what they want, typing in something and then stumbling.
Right. So in my Australian podcast tunes, Freedom Ocean I've got is number one and Entrepreneur on Fire is number two.
Number two.
Yeah. Well, at least I'm beating you there. We're going to take a screenshot just in case.
You'll have to, because I'm taking a screenshot right now, and I'm gonna have Dan Norris post it in your forum.
Right. So the thing is, it's a Libsyn function. Is that where you're doing this?
Yes, all via Libsyn, and there's some pretty underground places you have to put it, and it's interesting about where it is, but. You know, fortunately, this is what I do, and I spend an incredible amount of time kind of just under the hood, so to speak, of my media host as well as iTunes. And, you know, because I've now been featured on the iTunes business, the iTunes podcast homepage twice, for 1 week in July and now for 2 weeks here in August, I've actually built up a relationship with a couple people in iTunes because of that and, you know, reached out and queried them. And they're like, yeah, to be honest, you know, X, Y, and Z is really where we pull the iTunes SEO from. And I've been able to take that information and put it into my podcast and rank because of it.
Yeah, well, you're definitely number one in the States in that. So it's working. Now, I use Blueberry podcasting thing, and I think it pulls stuff just from the WordPress. So,
right.
You know, I've wondered how you did it. It's it's about the only one in the top 10 that's doing it, except maybe Pat Flynn looks like he's doing it as well.
And actually Pat Flynn is doing it because I sent him a screenshot video that I created showing him how I did it. And then he did it identical with his keywords that he wanted. And then the following week, guess what? My value add got me on Pat Flynn's Smart Passive Income podcast. And very interestingly enough, that was last week, episode 77. And that was a huge, huge boost to Entrepreneur on Fire. I'm actually doing a post, James, called The Pat Flynn Effect of what happens when you're on the Pat Flynn Show. And I'm publishing numbers, website visits, podcast increases, all the whole shebang. It's really going to be a fascinating article. But number two, this Friday, today, Pat Flynn interviewed your friend, Clay Collins, and he's doing the exact same thing that you're talking about. And they actually are having now a webinar this coming Thursday about it. So it's very fascinating.
Yeah, well, Pat Flynn, I think, featured Lead Player at some point. Then I picked up on it and quickly started selling a lot of it. And I'm no surprise. I think Pat Flynn will do very well with the Clay Collins interview. It's a smart thing to do. But that's been my business model, and I think it's worth paying attention to. But I know that Pat's always been into the affiliate stuff, but now he's getting into his own product. So I'm really keen to talk to him about that. You look at other shows like the Dave Ramsey Show, there's no keywords at all. It's just Dave Ramsey.
And I think, you know, he's been at number one for like 5 years, and I just was able to pry him out of there this past week. And I'm kind of waiting for a phone call actually from his office.
Well, congratulations. Now,
thank you.
You did raise something interesting, like the Pat Flynn effect. Of all of the people who you've interviewed, you've had over 300 now, and you've got some big names there like Seth Godin and Timothy Ferris. Who was able to drive you a lot of traffic? Who do you think really came to the party to reciprocate and to lift up the numbers?
Well, I will tell you one thing, and this is, you know, very honest. This has nothing to do with the fact that, you know, we're friends and that I'm on your podcast. But, you know, you were a pretty early interviewee of mine. And you were one of the first people that were really like, okay, John, like I'm posting a blog and then I'm going to do this tweet cycle. And I'm going to, and you really were just like so on it that I almost like took things that you had done and then crafted it into future emails that I sent out to other guests saying, hey, this is what past guests have done, X, Y, and Z. You know, I'm making it incredibly easy for you to do the same by basically pre-populating it for you. And so I made people that aren't just industrious and don't take advantage of things as much as you do a lot easier to make it happen for them. So then instead of them just going to the show notes page and clicking tweet and then forgetting about it, they were actually taking a little more action. So, you know, from very early on, I saw the kind of systems that you had in place to really maximize your experience. And there's definitely been a couple other people who have just really taken it, you know, to the next level. And, you know, I will say one thing, like I just had somebody on my podcast and I was also on his podcast. We did a back to back and he's, you know, a friend of both of ours, James Reynolds, and he does the show Traffic Jam. And, you know, he and I really just decided, hey, there's no reason we both run podcasts. Let's interview each other. Let's get that synergy going. And then, you know, when we launch, we'll really work off of that. So that's just a great example of, you know, when you really want to, you can work with the guests that you have to make the most of it, because it's a great opportunity for my guests. I mean, they're being exposed, especially now, to a massive audience. I mean, when you were on, James, the audience was a decent size, but it was nothing like it is now. I mean, you know, we're getting, you know, 12, 14, 16,000 downloads immediately upon release now on that day. And that's, you know, in 145 countries around the world. And, you know, I get emails back from my guests almost instantaneously, like, John, like I'm getting flooded, like tweeted and LinkedIn, and people are opting into my site. You know, not quite the Pat Flynn effect that I call it. I'm not there yet, I believe. But that's the direction I'm looking to take Entrepreneur on Fire.
That is phenomenal. Yeah, I mean, just those numbers are just incredible, because I get sort of on average 2,000 downloads per podcast episode. And each of the videos or audios I put out, I usually only get 500 or 600 people will listen to it or watch it within a day or so. But those people must be very, very sticky. I'm looking at my stats over the for Superfast Business. I got 55 visits from Entrepreneur on Fire, which is it's not that many, but probably having your name out there and associated with other people, like you mentioned it before in the same sentence of Seth Godin and Timothy Ferris, which I thought was kind of a hoot, because, you know, I don't see myself as being in the same bucket as them in some ways, even though I was right next to Timothy Ferris when he smashed a car in a driver training thing that we did, but just ran it into a tree. It wasn't anything serious. He's fine. but now tell me, the slippery fish, the ones that are very, very hard to nail down for an interview, what super techniques do you have for making that happen?
You know, I wish I had some super techniques, because I'll tell you what's really been happening to me, and this is just complete transparency, the last 3 months. I mean, I may have reached out to like 4 or 5 people to be on my website, and like literally in that much time. I mean, when I first launched, everybody was saying, John, you're never going to find enough people to be interviewed for a daily podcast. And I half believed them. But now it's like literally every single day I'm getting contacted by, you know, 10, 20, 30 like people, like just laying out their life story and being, you know, very honest. Like, this is why I'm successful. This is my aha moment. Like, this is my failure. This is what I want to share. And like, I'm going through these. And I mean, as of right now, I'm booked out through November. Like, if I was to send you my schedule once link, which books the Monday interviews, the next one that would come up would be November 4th. I mean, that's literally, I have 8 interviews every Monday from here until then, because that's been happening now. I've kind of hit that critical mass point, James, and it's kind of like reverse now. Instead of me reaching out to people, it's really becoming the other way around. And plus, you know, when I interview someone like yourself, or, you know, I interviewed a guy named Lo Silva about 2 or 3 months ago. And, you know, since then, this guy has just been uber connected. And like, he like set me up with like 14 or 15 interviews of people that were really incredible. Like, he just was connected to the industry and he would set up email intros and we would just make it happen. And it's kind of one of those things that you hit that critical mass, you can just keep rolling forward. But I will go back to the earlier days for listeners that are thinking about starting. And it was all about social proof. You know, the very first thing that I did was go to a conference, shook Pat Flynn's hand, shook Derek Halpern's hand, shook Cliff Ravenscraft's hand and said, guys, this is what I'm doing. Will you be my first guest? And all they said was yes. We didn't set a date. We didn't do anything. But then I went back and used their names as social proof, saying, hey, Pat Flynn and Derek Halpern and Cliff Ravenscraft said they would be on my podcast. You should too. And then people were just started to sign up through that. So that's a really easy way to get that ball rolling, is by using the social proof of other big names in the industry.
That's it. It's Mixergy does that well as well.
Very well.
So locking in a win is the technique that I also use to sort of climb up the step ladder as well. It's just, you know, it's when you've done something successful, screenshot it, document it. You know, no one else is out there curating your stuff. Maybe your mum in a scrapbook, but other than that, you've got to open up an Evernote and keep a little scorecard of things that you've done that are cool, or the things, you know, the highest level you've reached, because that can then get you access to everyone else at that particular level. So here's one final question, because I've really been stretching you a bit, is, are you finding you have copycats yet?
Absolutely. It was very interesting. I just got interviewed on a podcast. What was it called? Entrepreneur Showdown, I think is the name of the podcast. And they kind of actually make it their job to try to rile their guest up and to try to kind of ask them like hardball questions and curveballs and really kind of, you know, take a different approach. So during that, they literally rattled off like what they termed, not me, you know, 7 or 8 complete copycats of Entrepreneur on Fire. And to me, I was like, you know, I mean, like that, I can't remember what the phrase is right now, but basically, copying is a best form of, you know, flattery or whatever that phrase is. Mimicry is the best form of flattery. And to me, you know, that's truly what it comes down to, is that like, I'm honored that people would think that my show, that my format is good enough to actually try to have a similar format to that. Cause I did come out with a one of a kind show. It was the only show that was 7 days a week that was interviewing inspiring successful entrepreneurs. There was not one out there, which is exactly why I created it. Cause I wanted it. Cause I was that person that needed a 7 day a week show. Cause you know, unlike some people that don't drive to work every single day, that don't go to the gym, they may not need that much contact and they're not my avatar, but my avatars were out there in droves. And that's who I made the podcast for. And that's a system that other people are following now. And I wish them the best of luck. I mean, it's a great entrepreneurial world out there. And you know, we're all just trying to inspire others.
Yeah. Well, that's what we were talking about ultimately in our forum. Some of the people who comment may not be your target audience. And obviously, you've got a massive resonant target audience with the number of activity you've got. I was also on that Entrepreneur Showdown show. I think Joe and Dan come up
there
with a cool format there. And I think you're either in one camp. You're either copying or being copied. And it blows me away how many times I'll find a version of my site out there. But then I take the same approach as you. Like, thank goodness I'm not out there looking for someone's site that I could just rip, because then it's all over really, isn't it?
Yeah. Then you're back at square one.
So of all the podcasts you've done and all the questions you've asked and all the questions you've been asked, what's the gnarliest, most crazy question that you had, like, you hope you've never been asked, or that you would never want to answer, or that you asked that you thought twice about after you'd asked it?
Goodness, you know, with me, like, as far as asking questions, you know, I'm such like, you know, a format guy, you know, it's like a robot. I mean, I barely say anything out of tune, let alone, you know, out of key. I mean, it's just like, you know, just I could basically just press the play button on a recording and just walk away from the mic and go to the beach while my interviewees just kind of respond haphazardly to this recording. So, I mean, I've never actually been on that side and said it. And, you know, for me, I would probably have to just go to that Entrepreneur Showdown, because I literally get interviewed an average of 6 to 7 times per week, you know, which is probably one area, like if you and I sat down and talked, that I could carve out some more me time, some more JLD time to create stuff than giving an entire Thursday, on top of the fact I'm already giving an entire Monday for my interviews, because there's just so many podcasts coming out there. And I'm, you know, the number one guest on all of these podcasts, it seems, because, you know, they're pointing to me as an inspiration. But because of that, James, they're just tossing me up softballs. I mean, I could pretty much just hit the recording on those as well, because I'm just telling my life story, because that's all they're asking. So I don't
know. Well, I hope this interview's been different to all the others.
Oh, big time. That this yep. one and the Entrepreneur Showdown. And that's when they were like, basically, that was probably the answer to your question is when they're like, so X, Y, and Z, they're copying your show. Does that piss you off? And then I was like, no. And they kept digging and digging. And hey, that's their prerogative. And I decided to stay on the right side of the fence, in my opinion. And they didn't really get a rise out of me. But, you know, that's probably the gnarliest interview that I've had because for the most part, people are just softballing me.
Right. Now, I think that it is interesting. There's a lot of me too. So the first thing that we do in our help desk when someone wants to interview me is I've instructed my team to go and have a look at the site, make sure they have at least a small body of work and that it's going to be worth the return on investment for us. If they're not ready yet, we just tell them what criteria would be helpful. Because if you look at someone like Seth Godin, I think he's been sick of being milked for what he brings to the party. And I think this is where I think it's interesting. When you do eventually have a format change, it might be where, I mean, you are more powerful and more credentialed now than when you started the show. And I think you could bring more to the table and you could get even more powerful guests. You know, it'd be good if you could have the President of the United States or something interesting like that on there.
I'm trying to get some SEO juice on him. I use President Obama all the time in my imposter theory. I always talk about him. I say, President Obama has the imposter syndrome. He wakes up every morning, looks in the mirror and says, what am I doing? Why am I the President of the United States?
Right. Well, that's cool. Well, I know someone who runs some ads for him. So, you know, I'm sure you can get to the people you need to when you get to that next stage, whatever that is. And I know that it's going to be super successful. I love seeing people like you successful. I don't care if some people think that it's metronomic or whatever, because they're probably not the target audience. And I think what you have done is build a huge catchment. And now with some refinements, you have so much to gain. Small hinges swing big doors. So little tiny tweaks to a massive volume makes a massive outcome. And I learned this from running a car dealership that was doing tens of millions of dollars a year, just doing a simple thing like replacing batteries in remote controls when someone services their car. If you do 25 of those a day after a year, it makes a big difference to the bottom line, even if they were just $10 each. So, John, thank you so much for putting the time aside. And I especially want to thank you for busting into like a Fort Knox schedule to just me on the other, you know, I only sent you an email saying I'd love to talk to you about where you're up to and what you're doing now. So
yeah, but you're James Schrampko.
Oh, stop it. I mean, I know it's my show, but seriously, I just, you know, you still have to surrender the time to talk to our listeners. And I hope that listeners can ask a few comments right near this podcast to get to know you more. They should definitely head over to Entrepreneur on Fire and have a listen to what we're talking about. Tell me what you think of the intro of it. I wonder what other people think. Australians are a little bit less hypey.
Snarky?
No, not snarky. I think we're just more conservative.
I thought you said snarky.
No, less hypey. That's high.
Yeah, I totally get it. And I think a great thing to kind of leave this interview with too, James, because I really just do want to hammer this point home for your listeners.
Oh, this is good. John's wrapping up my show. I like it.
Yeah, I want to wrap the show up with this final thought because I think it really is important. So Entrepreneur on Fire, James, and myself launched September 22nd with literally zero online presence, no audience, no online presence. All my prior careers had nothing to do with the online world. I had not even a Twitter account. So, you know, absolutely, you know, it's been a very interesting journey. There's been the ups, there's been the downs, but it has brought me to where I am now, just a mere 11 months later, the number one ranked business podcast in all of iTunes in the USA. And James is claiming number two in Australia, but I'm seeing number one right now. And it's just, and the reason why I'm saying this is because it can be done. If you really just get out there and dominate that niche. I decided to dominate the 7-day a week podcast niche. And you know, some people hate it, some people love it. Enough people love it where I'm able to dominate it. And if you can just find your niche, your area, and dominate that, then you can be where you want to be in less than a year. It doesn't take long if you're willing to dominate.
That is a fantastic ending to what has been a sensational discussion. John, congratulations on being the number one ranked podcast in the US, which is pretty much the world from a podcasting perspective, the home of Apple. You are absolute legend. And I hope we get you back on the show. And I hope to see you in Sydney next year.
Yes, that'd be awesome. Thank you, James. Appreciate it.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.